So I'm going to start recording.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And we're here. My name is Kate Blofson, and I'm a part of Oral History Summer School. And I'm here mm-hmm. with Dan Udell in Melinda's apartment in Hudson, New York. And we're recording this story as a part of the Hudson Oral History Archives on June 5th, 2013. And can you please introduce yourself?
Certainly. My name is Dan Udell, and I'm a resident of Taconic, New York, which is a, you might say, a suburb of Hudson, New York, about 10 miles away. My wife and I, Mary Udell, have done a lot of volunteer work in the town. Actually, we started in Taconic. We were involved in a beautification project, putting flower pots of flowers up and down the street, a very busy section, and we tried to make it into a little village. We didn't really succeed, but it was fun. We did that for 3 or 4 years. And since we were actually in the Hudson City School District, we became more involved with that because the flowers didn't work out. They were gorgeous flowers. They were beautiful. People stopped and actually, over the years, we did it for about 4 years. Some people stopped, a family in particular, and they said when they came up here for their summer vacations, that was one of the things they looked forward to, coming in and stopping at the grocery store and seeing the pots of flowers. So that got us going on the whole idea of community involvement. Before that, I had a long career with IBM as a writer, science writer, manager, director, producer, you name it. And I really did not have much time for community involvement. My community involvement consisted mostly of checking off a box on my United Way. You know, did I want to give it to this charitable organization or that? That was pretty much the extent of it. I had no time for outside. And when we moved up here, I wouldn't call myself retired, but maybe semi-retired. I still work, but no longer as an employee. I'm a consultant. I do work as I find it, but mostly we do a lot of volunteer work. Now, you would like me to go on, or what would you like me to do?
However you prefer.
Okay, we got involved in the beginning, as I say, through the schools. My wife, Mary, saw a note from Michelle Obama after Barack was elected. We're Barack fans. We also have Barack stickers on the back of our car from 08. People say, isn't that going to fall off eventually? I said, I don't know, but we're keeping it. And we got an email from her, and she urged us to become involved in volunteer efforts. And Mary is going to tell that story, so I won't go into it too much. But we went to the local principal of the high school here, and offered our services, and one thing led to another. And I have a background of video work, particularly at IBM. I was in charge of a network that was across the United States in every IBM office. We had TV sets and a daily program, news program, and we interviewed executives, our executives were not talking to the employees. So we put up a network and put up a news organization, and we went out and got the news. We pulled it out of them. And it was very successful. Great fun. That's what really got me started. And I also did some films there on the future of computing. What would the next computer look like? And my goal there, my strategy was to not talk about the next gee whiz thing, but to go way into the future, using capabilities that were 10 to 100 times more powerful than anything we had seen at that point. So we had the voice recognition, which in the industry hadn't emerged yet. All kinds of great gadgets like that. So so we made a film on what computers might do. And interestingly enough, that's what they're doing. But the key was to take a huge leap forward. Forget about all the nuts and bolts, because you get tied up in that and nobody would ever approve it. But go way into the future where not even their chief scientist could say, well, that couldn't happen, or it might happen, or it might not happen, or it wouldn't happen this or that way. It was such a huge leap that nobody could argue. So that's how we did it. But again, once we lived in Stamford, Connecticut for almost 20 years when I was working for IBM. It was very convenient. I could go to their headquarters in White Plains or Armonk or wherever, New York. And the other piece of my background, I was in charge of announcing all IBM products for a number of years. Everything that was announced, I announced. And we did it often in New York City and their headquarters in 590 Madison Avenue. Great experience, and lots of TV coverage and radio coverage, of course, magazines, newspapers. So I'm familiar, very familiar with media and the needs of media and the intersection of the public and the corporations with the media. I find it fascinating today. I'm a news junkie. We always listen to MSNBC on television, and like Rachel Maddow and the whole gang there. Love it. Anyway, back to Hudson. I brought my videography skills with me, and we, in our first experience, I guess we've been doing this for 4 years now, we started off with junior high students, a small group of kids, and they were, I guess you'd call them challenged kids in one way or another. I think the school failed them. It's not that they were innately challenged. It's that somehow they weren't able to connect. And the amazing thing was, we brought in video gear and a big camera, studio camera, and they immediately, they're kids. They know electronics. They know computers now. They grabbed the machines and they started walking down the hall. We were following them. They were leading the way. There was a basketball game going on. The mayor was there, and they interviewed the mayor, and they interviewed the coach. And we saw something right away. If we put these kids into a classroom setting, a lecture hall setting, you lost them. Their eyes would glaze over. If you gave them a camera and said, go, and you'd be following them. They're animated. They're full of energy, and full of intelligence. But somehow, as soon as they sat down and I started doing a blackboard thing, they just shut down. So there's some barriers. I'm not sure who's responsible for putting up the barriers, but they're there. They really are. And these kids in particular have trouble dealing with that barrier. But if you reach out to them, you can reach them. This most recent group, these were, again, challenged kids from the freshman through senior levels, all in one, so it's a one-room schoolhouse. Right? Mm. Some of these kids would only put their head down on their desk, would not look up. And if they did raise their head, they would cover their face with their hands. And you began to wonder, are we reaching these kids? So what we did in this case, instead of going out, we brought people in from the community, and we interviewed them on tape. We have it's an oral history project, if you will. People, the mayor, the president of the town council, a designer, a all kinds of people, a mason who does a lot of work actually in town restoring houses. In particular, we wanted to get people in who had a story to tell most meaningfully about their childhood and the tough times they had. One woman, amazing. She is a leader in the community now. And she was raised by her grandmother, basically, and moved from one borough in New York City to another, just keeping ahead of the drug traffic. Mother would say, time to move, and they'd move to another area to get away from the crime and the drugs. And how she evolved, you know, and what connected with her was so fascinating. And these kids, this was a case where, yeah, they were in a lecture hall series setting. They weren't being lectured to. That's the key. Somebody was reaching them on a one-to-one basis about their own personal stories, and they were connecting. You could see it. They, instead of burying their heads in their hands, they were looking at the person and listening, and you could see they were following. This one fellow in particular, who Mr. Heads Down, after one of these presentations, he got up out of his chair, went over to the presenter, shook his hand and said, thank you, that was wonderful. And I nearly cried. I thought, oh my God. There's a connection. So we were very proud of that. And it just ended, really. Actually, it's still going on a little bit. You have a question?
Just ended for the school.
For this school semester. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just ending it up. So what else can I tell you about? Well, we get involved in a lot of other things. We're very heavily involved. I was in the passing the school's budget. It's a big budget. It's $43 million. And because of a number of things, union contracts with the teachers, they guaranteed them something like a 4% raise every year. And the state cut back on their funding, and we had had big layoffs 2 years ago. Cut 30 teachers, did away with the business department. There was talk about having to cut kindergarten. That's outrageous. But we found out that New York State does not mandate kindergarten. It's not mandated. You don't have to have a kindergarten in New York State, which I thought is terrible. I thought this was an enlightened state. But it was on the docket as something that, you know, might be eliminated. So we didn't drop everything else, but we got very involved and created a Friends of the Hudson Schools group, and we had banners and buttons, and we got the election records, the voter registration records, and did it just like a political campaign. Put it in a database, and I started cutting it up into pieces and handing it out, email to different people, and got people to call. And we won 60%, 60 to 40. Very happy because now, we think Maria Sudmeyer, the new superintendent, is great. She inherited just a huge mess, just terrible. They had something like eight different superintendents of schools in 10 years. So it was just a revolving door. Nobody was paying attention to anything. But she really is, and we thought, well, let's maybe this is our hope. Let's try it. And so far, I think it's worked out. It's worked out very well. She is even, for kids who are challenged kids, no one school district has all the resources to address their needs. So she is putting together with school districts in Greene County and also Rensselaer County, an institute, if you will, to handle challenged kids with special needs. so we can pool our resources. So so we get involved in things like that. When we're dedicated to education and the kids, we love kids. They're marvelous, absolutely marvelous. The most wonderful thing is teaching them, not that we're teachers, we're not certified, but we're instructing them, if you will. But you watch them grow, and especially in high school and junior high, they get bigger, but they become more mature, and you go down the street and they'll wave to you. They're very interested in, particularly in an adult who shows some interest in them. Any interest, you know, anything. Another group we're involved in, we love, is the reading program, Hudson Reads. And it's in the middle school, and there are about 100 or so people from the community who come in every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at noon to read to the kids, read with the kids. And you form relationships with them. They get to know you on a first-name basis. And again, you can watch their interactions. This one poor fellow, I've been reading with Kirk, and he suffers from something I never heard of before called cat scratch fever. You ever heard of it? No. You can get it from a cat, a particular horrible virus, and it will paralyze you. And he needs an aide to help him, to bring him in. They sit him in a chair, and he can just barely, we have lunch and we read, he can just barely open, you know, his sandwiches. And most of the time I would read to him, but then we got one of these tablets, and they had a word game in there, which was great fun, and it enabled him to touch the tablet, you know, different keys on the tablet. And it was a spelling word game. He got such a kick out of that, and suddenly there was interaction and feedback, because this fever that he had endured just paralyzed him, basically. But you would think, to look at him, that he was paralyzed mentally and emotionally. No. Now, he was trapped inside his head, and he didn't have an ability to interact with the world except through this tablet. And suddenly, it all became so clear. And then you think, oh, my God, how much worse it is to know there's a living, thinking, breathing, feeling human being there that wants to get out, you know? So, what else haven't I talked about? I don't know. The school, the videography. Of course, we go to, you know, all of the school board meetings, and we're also involved with other things in the community. Four or five years ago, we got involved with the NAACP here, but it didn't work. It didn't take off. For some reason or other, this town has a bunch of silos, if you will. A lot of people are I wouldn't call them cliques, but they're silos, people with single focus, and they don't interact that much. So NAACP didn't work out. We also are involved in something called Parents in Partnership, which we truly believe in. The school, this is a long story, the school has a program. They claim it's mandated by New York State. It's a system of, it's a punitive system, doling out punishment for violations of the code of conduct, which is a 60-page, we helped rewrite it, 60-page document. Can you believe that? Can you believe going to a parent who's got difficulty, second language, got difficulty in plunking that down in front of them, of what their child should or shouldn't do, can or can't do, and the punishments that will be meted out for each infraction. We know for a fact, because we've seen it, that it is biased against minority kids. And so we, this group, Parents in Partnership, their goal, their mission in life is to represent the parent, if the parent is willing, you have to get the okay of the parent, and the child, and the student, to represent them. And this is like a court case. I mean, you go in, and it's them versus us. You know, you did this on this and such day, and as a result, you're going to be suspended from school for X days. And the parent is not aware of what's going to happen at this meeting. We are, so we act like a public defender. And we think of them as the DA, and see, they're intimidated to get tough with the administration for being behind.